Hola, hello, hi, bienvenido. Welcome back or welcome to Mentors Today. I'm really excited. This is a conversation that's kind of been brewing for a while as life happens and business happens and scheduling happens with my friend Mika Lejean. Mika is the co-founder at Iduru and the head of brand partnerships, and or she's going to tell us a bigger, more important title now at Irregular Hours in New York City. Mika hails from the bustling streets of New York, self-describes as a humanist technologist, writer, and educator on a mission to uncover the secrets of the digital universe and how that connects us as people. Mika has an unquenchable thirst for understanding how the digital realm shapes our everyday lives, and they are as much a multi-hyphenate millennial as I have ever met, putting so much energy into so many incredible organizations. They are a co-founder of Iduru, a creative tech company that existed at the intersection of identity and culture, and now serve on the executive team at the Irregular Hours organization, chair of the board of the directors at the Vibe Theater Experience, a co-creator of Collective Media Community, and a delegate to the C100 Canadian Entrepreneurship Mission. We've gotten to know one another through the serendipity of our mentorship experiences, and since then, I've been drawn to their unique view of humanity and just strong, positive vibes. And so I was really, really eager to have this conversation. So Mika, hello, good morning from LA to New York City.
Hello, greetings, greetings. I'm so excited to be here, Rob. It's gonna be a fun conversation.
How are you? How's your day going so far?
Things are great. So it's pretty chilly here, but I'm feeling good. I have a Celsius energy drink today. That's an unpaid plug. Right. And we're feeling good.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're supposed to get some rain here in LA today. And so I've got a long sleeve shirt on. So I'm pretending like it's fall. It's a nice break from our 80 degree sunny temperatures that we've had for the last couple of weeks. So I'm ready for some fall weather. So
I miss that. I don't know if you know, but I think I told you I used to live in LA. So I miss that a lot.
Yes.
New York is wonderful, but the weather can be wanting sometimes.
said like someone who has lived on both coasts. There we go. So we're going to cover a ton of ground today. As mentioned in your bio and in our prior conversation, like you've just got such a ton of experience. And to me, it's really just about the impact that you have through all of these different communities and organizations you're a part of. You've had some really cool changes that have gone on in the last 6 months of your life that lead you to what you're going to share with us today about Irregular Hours in particular. And we're going to then kind of venture off into what your vision for the future is. But at the core of this, as I always say, like I'm not a product or a company or a process person, I'm a people person, right? And so the thing that was immediately most interesting to me when we met was this idea that you describe yourself as a humanist technologist. And I want to understand today, right out of the gate, like how does a humanist technologist see the world?
I love this question. So I guess maybe for a little background also on even that language comes from, so I went to the New School, and for folks who aren't aware of the New School, it is a school that is known for driving very strong cultural, socially conscious liberal arts. It's a liberal arts college. And so that title is a bit of a, maybe a nod to what I studied there, where I did a self-design degree and my concluding thesis title was Intersectional Pedagogies Through the Arts and Social Engagement. So at the core, meaning how do we gain and impart knowledge with young people through race, class, gender, sexuality, ability lenses? And then how do the arts and community building impact, support, and amplify that? So that's a decent chunk of the humanist portion of that.
Sure.
When it comes to the technologist portion, my background is all over the place. I've had many careers, and it's funny because to your point, the last year especially, it's sort of all coalesced to now I am doing a lot of the things I'm passionate and excited about, and my day-to-day work is akin to what I kind of had hoped to do as a little kid, which is really funny. So
awesome.
I'll share more about that in a second. But so the technology work comes from when I finished at the New School, or during my time at the New School, I was director of education for an arts organization here in New York City called No Longer Empty. And at the time, the organization unfortunately closed during COVID due to funding restrictions. But at the time, my main mandate was building arts education programs for young people across New York City. And so as I was spending a lot of time with them and in parallel having conversations with my former co-founder, Michael, and all the products we built, was really thinking about how do young people express themselves on the internet, what tools and resources are available that are working, but often are not, as we know. And that sort of what got me into like sort of the, I would say the technologist terminology. Although it is funny, Rob, because I never said I was in tech until 2022. So I would sort of, I've always had this sort of weird relationship with saying I work in tech, I think because it's become such a giant word now that in some ways
it imparts a certain perception of things, of people.
Exactly. And so a lot of my work the last, I guess, 5 or 6 years or so has really been around how do we create technology or leverage technology as tools for self-expression and creativity and identity formation for all of us, and especially for the next generation. So that's been sort of a through line. It's a bit of art, it's a bit of cultural awareness, it's a bit of technology, and a lot of people.
Yeah, and that's, I think maybe some of that is what's been most fascinating to me as we've gotten to know each other, and I just kind of observe your journey. Because I often come at it, there's a line that one of my favorite podcasters, Kara Swisher, used to say all the time when describing kind of the tech bro culture, right? And she would say that what we've learned now is that a lot more of them should have taken humanities and philosophy classes in college and a lot less coding classes, right? Mm-hmm. And so in part, just who you are, like what you represent and how you present to the world, and then just how your brain works as we've gotten to know each other, to me is like, hey, let's retake technology. Like let's dismantle this tech bro kind of perception, which by the way is universally applied to all sexes, right? It's not just
I lean into my tech bro era. I'm wearing vests and I don't own Allbirds, but I am wearing some of the pieces when I go to events. You know, it's subversive sometimes, right? So it's fun. Yeah.
And so to me, it's like, it's instead of just saying like, no, we can't talk about technology, we can only talk about humanities and the arts, I've always been intrigued by this idea that you embraced both. Right. Because to me, I'm a dad, but my daughter's now 30, but I've got nieces that are 15 and 12 who are much more natively online. And to me, it's like, okay, how do we figure out to help them maintain and build strong identity, but also like just human relationships? Is that part of where your focus goes? Is how do we embrace it, but also kind of make sure that it still does the fundamental human things?
Absolutely. And I would even say, let me say that more clearly. Absolutely. And I would say that a piece of it is not purely embracing it, meaning we need to take all of it and use all of it ourselves. It's about being able to create frameworks for oneself, understanding what is useful for you and what is not, and then adjust accordingly. So for example, I got Facebook when high school was like the first allowed on. I was one of like the schools in Canada. I'm from Toronto originally, and that's what we got it, and everyone was so excited. So I've had a Facebook account for a very long time, and I don't use it anymore. It's been deactivated probably for more time than it's been active when I started using it. I have Instagram, but I really only use it to keep in touch with certain people who I just like don't. I'm very bad at text messaging. Rather, I treat text messaging like letter writing. So unless I have time to sit down and actually intentionally reply to someone's message, even if it's really short, I want to make sure I'm doing so. And so I use Instagram as sort of a cheat around that, where I can send photos back and forth with people quickly without having unread notifications on my phone.
Wow.
But with that example, is like how we all use technology is going to be really particular to the lifestyle we live, the life we want to live, and creating better spaces, both physical and digital, that enable that.
Yeah, pull on that thread a little bit for me, because I have a phrase I say quite a lot, which is, you know, let's use technology or tech and not let it use us, mm-hmm. right? And so for any of us, adults, younger people, you know, kids coming up, like, what's the how behind we do that? Like, not just the, hey, let's make a big blanket statement, like we should use tech instead of letting it use us, and then we just let it use us, right? Like talk to me about maybe some practical things that you've learned, both in your studies as well as your work now, about how we can utilize technology, or how young people can utilize technology and not just become kind of, you know, tools in the algorithm.
One of the things I've seen over the years through the work I've done, I did a department and accelerator during COVID, during 2020, I should say, to part an accelerator during 2020 called Headstream. And this accelerator was really exciting because they were focused on funding and supporting startups building mental health oriented technology, and especially those building around BIPOC, LGBTQIA+, or young women. And one of the things that I really loved through this was I started to build a community in this space where we could call it mental health, mental wellness. You know, there's these actually mean different things, but talking about like mental prosperity, we'll say, for the next generation. And one of the things that I really loved and learned through this was examples around how impact models can and should be built on day one for most technology companies. And in the case of my most recent startup, Eduru, we actually worked with an organization called Hope Lab, which builds and supports and advises startups building mental health oriented youth products.
Okay.
We worked with them to build out an entire impact pathway that measured the long-term mental health effects of identity formation and creation using an avatar, for example. And so I'm a really big proponent of, quite honestly, any technology that's being created, it doesn't need to be, you know, a clinical research-backed deep dive into an impact model to begin with, but definitely having very clear values around how is this product going to end up being user additive, not extractive. And I think if we are guided by that through whatever technology, education programs, whatever it might be, that's like what's going to create a huge, I think a big change for a lot of us is even just from day one as a founder or operator, thinking about that upfront.
So big onus on the creators of these things, on the companies.
100%.
And then as a user, I guess maybe if I'm hearing kind of between the lines there, some of the answer of how to not get used by it might just be just not using some of it.
Absolutely. And I think it's also, you know, stepping back to take perspective. My husband and I have been playing a lot lately backgammon, which I haven't played since I was a little kid. I love backgammon. And so, you know, some days, some evenings when we're tired, we sit and watch reruns of Buffy. And some days when we're tired, we sit and play backgammon. And I think being able to even just have an alternate to that action you have on a tech, an app or whatever it might be is really key because at least you have the option and you know it is there. And so having that sort of toolkit ready when you realize, you know what, I need some time off, I need to do something different, really being able to fill up more hobbies or personal work in that way.
No, it makes sense. All right, let's go back a couple of steps here because you tease something and it's funny because now that I'm listening, I'm picking up like a little Canadian accent buried in there somewhere amidst all your travels, which I've never picked up before in our conversation. So like, let's talk about that, like your story. So you referenced you had Facebook when you were in high school and high school was in Toronto. So you're from Canada. Yes. I'm curious, like, was this idea of entrepreneurship or even just as I like to call it, entrepreneurial thinking and service of others, was that kind of in the DNA of your family or are you just the wild child that just struck out in a whole different direction? Like, what's the background of the family story? How were you brought up?
I love this question. I'd say most people in my families are the wild child in their own way.
Nice.
So I'll do maybe chronological and then I'll answer your question around entrepreneurship. So my dad's side of the family is Scottish, Irish, World War II fighter pilot and nurse who immigrated to Canada back in the late 40s, early 50s.
Wow.
And my mom's side of the family, my grandfather, my mom's dad, grew up in West Africa, but ended up teaching microbiology. He was in academia, so he had a PhD in microbiology, and that's what ended up bringing him to the United States was to go to school. And my gogi, my mom's mom, escaped apartheid when she was a teenager.
Okay.
And moved to the United States from South Africa to also go to school. And she, especially my family, I have a family of very mostly like strong, it's almost all women, and it's very strong women.
You are proud, you are continuing the lineage, I can tell you that.
Absolutely, yeah, we are all in it. And my mom's mom, my gogi, her mother, so we very much, that maternal line has been something we talk a lot about in our family. And my gogi's mom was an entrepreneur. She ended up adopting many children throughout her life. She was an educator. She was the community caregiver. Like, she very much acted in that role. And so that's something I've always grown up with. My gogi also did a lot of work with the UN in around anti-war and anti-violence against women. So I grew up very much with a clear awareness of oppression and justice in the world through a global lens as well, because it wasn't just purely Canada. So fast forward a little bit, my mom's side of the family was in Winnipeg. My dad's was in Toronto. I ended up being born in Toronto. And I had a very, I've had many careers. And through my work at Irregular Hours, I talk about this a lot with emerging professionals, because when you are the person you are when you're five and who you think you're going to be when you're really old at 25 are very different people.
And I'll tell you, they're very different when you get to 55 too. So
Exactly. And so I've had many, many careers, and it's, you know, as I mentioned, it's all coalescing now to one really clear vision. But I was a child actor. So I went to performing arts elementary and high school.
Wow.
I danced. I had an agent, was an actor, sang, painted. My dad's a jazz musician. And my mom's originally was in the art world, and then now it works in nonprofits and impact in Canada. And so, you know, everyone kind of did something very different from the previous generation. And when I was in the summer I got Facebook, actually, I also got an internship at a marketing firm in Toronto, where I ended up joining the team at the end of the summer as a proper full employee, working as the right hand to the founder. And so I worked there for 4 years across editorial, when blogs were cool, a thing. Worked across experiential, before that was a word, online and offline branded community building, starting with Facebook, of course. And so I've seen firsthand sort of how this technology, or these social, really specifically social media products, have evolved over time. And then I had my own consultancy for many years doing the same thing, but focused on millennials before we called ourselves that. And then that's how I ended up at the New School, when I realized I needed to go back into the arts. I needed to go back supporting young people in the same way my educators did for me.
Right.
And so if you look at the through thread here, it's always been about, for me at least, finding opportunities to support building better equity for young people, most especially communities of resilience, young people who are often underrepresented, under-supported, underfunded, and getting to spend my day with really smart, interesting, cool people, which is everyone. And so now my role and my work is really just creating opportunities wherever I can, both digital and physical.
Yeah.
And I want to just add one last comment to your question around, you know, entrepreneurship. Is it something I always wanted, or was it in my DNA? I definitely think it's something, obviously, I've grown up with, knowing lots of people who are entrepreneurs. But quite honestly, I have never been explicitly gone out and said, I need to found a company, or I need to be, like, that's just not, I just really like working on things that are exciting and interesting, and I think will bring change about in the world. And I just jump on board for it. And so it's never about specifically entrepreneurship, but it's always about impact.
No, and thank you for illuminating that for us. And in truth, and folks who listen all the time know, I have this belief set that I think what we're really talking about is entrepreneurial thinkers, as opposed to entrepreneurs per se, right? And entrepreneurial thinkers can present themselves, have many of the same traits and many of the same drivers, but can present themselves in so many different places and ways throughout kind of the superstructure of the world that we live in. And to me, a world populated with entrepreneurial thinkers is a much more progressive, thoughtful, inclusive world than one that's just populated by quote unquote entrepreneurs, right? In the strictest sense.
I agree. And I think we talk a lot in tech about disruption, but as someone who went into the arts world, having not really worked full time in an art, like at all, in an arts nonprofit, I went in as an intrapreneur. And so I actually redesigned all the arts programs and fundraised and created a comm strategy. And I think that's something for anyone, whether they're an established, more established mid-level professional who has experience but is looking to make a transition, or a young person who's trying to figure out, how do I do something impactful without necessarily starting my own company? There's so many opportunities to do that.
So I would imagine we're going to dive into your work now, because I would imagine that there are young people that are interacting with you and your team at irregular hours. You're going to tell us all about it, who literally are thinking to themselves, like, where do I go? What do I do? Like, how do I develop my career? Am I entrepreneurial? Well, how do I create impact? How do I create benefit for myself? Right. So you are now the leader of this amazing, unique organization at Irregular Hours in New York City, which isn't just going to be in New York City. Tell us all about Irregular Hours, what it is, give us the snapshot, but also tell us kind of maybe how you found your way there.
Absolutely. So I've been really fortunate the last couple of years to work really closely with our CEO, Molly Logan, who we were connected through a mutual friend. And it was one of those relationships where you get introduced, it takes 2 months to get the call scheduled because you're both very busy. And then when you finally get the 30 minutes on the calendar, you end up canceling your whole afternoon to take a 3-hour call. So it was,
we love this.
Exactly. So from the very beginning, we've had a really great relationship working together across a couple different initiatives. And earlier this year, Molly and the team were really starting to gear up towards the launch. And I had the really fortunate pleasure and honor to join as a business partner with her in building this company. And Irregular Hours is a company that's really close to my heart because it pulls a lot of the threads that I've been talking about, that I care deeply about, of supporting young people in whatever phase of their life that they're navigating. And, you know, at the core for a lot of folks, work just isn't working, especially for those who are in the early stages of their career. What's boggling about this, though, is that we'll say Gen Z, for ease of this conversation, are about to be the largest workforce in the world. So they're going to, by 2030, they will be the largest workforce, but there are often very little tools to actually help them navigate their professional lives. I won't name any names, but often a lot of products built around the professional self or around, you know, job hunting, any of that, are not oriented for that early career professional. And we're seeing like gigantic losses in the United States, like $30.5 billion is lost annually due to entry-level turnover.
Wow. That's just like a crazy inefficiency.
Just throwing it away.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if you can remember, you know, your first job getting out of college, like half of all students leave their job in their first year, which is super inefficient, both for that young person, that emerging professional who's trying to figure out what is this next stage in my life, and for the company, because they're having to pay and retrain and put out calls for hire. Like we're wasting so much time. And so what our team is building is a full suite of products that support this generation, go from summer internship to CEO or whatever their dream title might be. And we launched a professional archetype system earlier this year that I recommend everyone who's listening go and do. It's 5 minutes to your future, and you take this really awesome, delightful quiz, and then you get a deep dive self-assessment at the end that you can explore. There's 8 archetypes total, and you can learn a lot more about one's professional identity and how you bring yourself to the workplace. And then we have a ton of offerings built around that as we ramp up to launch our core product in the spring. We have some workshops.
And it's a combination, like workshops, tips on it. It's a combination of like digital tools, online, the self-assessment test, but also physical place. Like you're in,
exactly.
There is a location in New York City that I know from our conversations this summer.
Exactly. So there's the digital tools, which starts with the archetype framework. We have workshops that we run both live and digitally. And then we also have our career center, as you mentioned, here in New York City, which we bring actually on the road as well. So we just got home from being in the South, which was my first time there, which was great. And we had the chance to go to the University of Alabama, do some programming with Stillman College, which is an HBCU in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And then we also have had the opportunity now, you know, as we build up the core product, and I can't say too much, of course, because
nope,
it's not live yet.
Okay.
I don't want to spill any beans, but we're building out some really robust tools that'll support the next generation of work, understand how to tell better stories about themselves and their experiences, and then in turn, help employers understand and translate that in ways that are useful for them. And then we do campus activations and programming, workshops, a lot of good stuff.
And I assume, but please tell us about this. Like, you have found, you and Molly, it was, I think you said.
Molly, yeah. Name,
right? You and Molly have found there's just a gap. There's a hole here that these, and again, we'll just call it all young people, right? So we don't just pick on Gen Z, because it's going to be the Gen Alpha people that are behind them. So there's just this disconnect, right? So we're in a period, and you just found that no one was serving their emotional, intellectual, physical needs. Like, we just weren't providing them with context. We were basically just, if I'm guessing, we're just kind of shaming them for being the problem, instead of being just part of the workforce.
Well, exactly. And most products that are out there right now are point solutions. They're not system solutions. And if you look at how, I'll also say the next generation, which is really a psychographic in many ways now, but this next generation, there is no product that takes a holistic approach to them as people. But the thing is, we're living in a world where we all want products that take into account our whole selves. And so there's nothing like that out there. We're building Irregular Hours to be that solution.
Yeah. And when you combine, it's powerful, right? When you combine the digital presence with services, a component to it, educational component to it, and then also in some cases, either on the road, live locally, or in New York City at the Career Center, like a physical place where they can gather, or they can feel seen and heard and appreciated and educated and informed and empowered. That's pretty powerful. Like, this sounds like something you might be pretty excited about for a long time to come.
For sure. We certainly are. And there's a lot coming up right now, even just in the few weeks that'll follow this coming out. I'm sure there's a lot in the works. So more there soon.
That's awesome. Now that you talked about, I mean, child actor, all these different creative things. So that's just a part of what you do. We rattled them off, and I want you to be able to talk about them because I know they're all important to you. Right. So we rattled off in your bio a number of different organizations you've been a part of. The next one that I guess now it kind of makes sense to me, right? Because of your childhood experiences, you're part of this Vibe Theater experience. Tell us what that is and why it's like just such a cool part of your life.
Yeah. So Vibe Theater Experience is an organization that's New York based, but works nationally to build theater programming and professional development programming for Black girls and gender expansive youth around the United States. And the organization started about 20 years ago here in New York by two theater professionals, young women in their 20s, who said, there's a huge gap here. We need to help create opportunity. And so the organization has evolved quite a bit over the many years. And I had the honor to join in 2022, perhaps. I don't remember time anymore. Could have been 2021. Really through a friend who was sitting on the board, and she introduced me to the then executive director. I had the honor of joining the board. And actually when she stepped down from her role, the board elected the two co-interim directors to be the co-executive directors. And this was a landmark moment, not only because it was exciting to bring in two folks to do what is a giant role, but also because the women that we brought into the role, who are co-executive directors now, are also in their 20s. And so it was a really beautiful nod back to the origination of the organization.
Cool.
And on top of that, Mimi, one of the co-EDs, has been taking part in Vibe programs for over a decade. And
okay.
It just, all this idea around replicability and building programs that actually take you from the earliest stages of dabbling in a practice to then developing that practice, to then teaching it to other people, being an arts administrator is so important. And so I've had the honor of being on the board for over a year. And then as you might have mentioned, being the chair as well, which has been really wonderful.
That's incredible. A side note here, you'll find fascinating an episode that I recorded yesterday, which will come out in sequence with yours in the next couple of weeks, with a young man. He's a mentee of mine from Rwanda. He runs an organization called I Debate Rwanda. And the thing that jumps out about what you just said is he was referencing, when we kind of put the timeline together yesterday, that there are young people, young adults now, who were middle schoolers, like 10, 12-year-old kids who had gone through the very first iterations of his program 10 years ago, who are now have graduated through it, have gone to work for them, have been in leadership positions inside the organization, and have even now kind of gone on and become leaders in the country, which was always his dream. Right. And
yes.
And he said that, to your point about the women that were involved in this experience inside of the Vibe Theater group, is he said that it wasn't until some of those kids got to those points in the organization naturally that he, as the original creator, started to kind of just go, wow, see, it's all possible. Like the personal connection of, like, I was a student of these programs, I was a beneficiary of these things, and now I can advocate for it more strongly than probably anybody else could, is a unique power. So that's
absolutely. I would love to chat.
Yeah, 100%. That's an easy one. Awesome. No. Yeah, Jean-Michel is a great guy. I'll do that one when we're done. But you hit on something, and I want to talk about collective media, which you're a part of, and what that's all about. But you hit on something that it really is always present in my mind. This super broad topic, and maybe you and I can help make it digestibly understandable to people in today's world, like, of inclusivity and diversity and equity of access and equality, like all these things that we fundamentally, I believe, good people in this world fundamentally understand those things are important. But I think far too many of us don't understand, like, what to do about those things and how to bring those things into our companies, our workplaces, our organization, our children's lives, right? How do we make, so I'm not asking you to represent the entirety of humanity and give us the map here, but you do have hugely important experiences that I value. And so I want you to help us try and kind of break these things apart to understand not just like why it's really important that we have more inclusive and diverse workplaces, or that we shape more inclusive and diverse experiences for our young workers that are coming up into our workforce or our young students, but just like why it's maybe I'm naive. Like, it's hard to aspire to a world that is more inclusive, more diverse, more equitable, et cetera. But I also think it's completely doable. And I passionately believe it's so doable, mostly because I've gotten outside of my own bubbles in my life. And I've realized how incredibly similar and how much more alike we are than we are distant and different from one another. And so maybe you can help me unpack it. I don't even know if there's a question in there, right? But like, if we could just dive into this topic a little bit, I'd love to hear your energy around this.
Absolutely happy to share. And I agree. I think it's something, so I'll pull a few different thoughts, both from my personal experience, my studies, and then just my opinion. Maybe just to set a foundation for folks listening, there's a really big difference between equality and equity. And I think first step, if someone's listening to this and you think you know, if you don't think you know the difference, just do a quick Google search and then go to the images. So I think there's like the really, like some really potent graphics of, you know, like people standing looking over a fence at a baseball game.
Of all things. Like,
exactly. And it's like making sure folks have boxes that are the right size to help them see over the fence. So it's just about making sure everyone gets what they need to reach happiness, equity, whatever, you know, context.
And those boxes in that metaphor, that's different for different people.
Exactly.
And that's okay. Like that's natural.
Like if we're, you and I are trying to get somewhere at the same time and I want a scooter and you don't know how to, and you want to ride a bike, like you should be able to do that to get to the same place the way you want to. And so really like, that's a very overly simplified example, but that's, I just want to clarify for folks listening,
foundation.
They are not the same thing. Yeah. I think, you know, I spent a lot of time of this, maybe from a practical or sort of personal experience. I used to teach a program teaching girls in China over Zoom about intersectional feminism, which in it's on its own, those words are also, I can talk about them, but are big ideas. And so I got to witness firsthand working with, these are also students who were in high school. So they were about like 14 to 18 with vastly different personal socioeconomic experiences, LGBTQIA plus or not identities, just like all over the range. And then some of them were students who had grown up partially in China and then now live in somewhere in North America.
Okay.
So even more just layers of identities coming to these calls and layers of perspectives. And one of the biggest things that I learned in doing this program is that the ideas that you and I are talking about, to your point, really easy to understand. It's really like, do you have empathy for the existence of other humans and wish that everyone could live their fullest life? If yes, press go, you know, like it's, and that's true for anyone you have these conversations with, and most especially with young people. I mean, I'm forgetting the number off the top of my head. I could probably Google it quickly, but the majority of the world are going to be under 30 within the next.
Yeah, no, sure. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know the exact statistic either, but yes, the population trend is trending dramatically younger. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. 2030 is when Gen Z will be the largest workforce. But even just you, if you look at population of how many folks are people of like Black, Indigenous, or people of color, how many are LGBTQIA plus, like those numbers are huge. And so we're going to be starting to see, I hope anyway, a tide shift, and not only in these conversations being even more visible, the opportunity for them for action to be taken based on them. I think, you know, I mentioned this earlier in the work context, it's all systems. It's not in one, it can't change in one area and not be enacted in another in our world. So whether it's government and private companies, you know, even within private companies, there's so many layers to, you know, a scale up to a startup to a two-person company. And this comes back to that idea I mentioned earlier around impact and around from day one, being really clear on what are your values and how you want to build something. Because that's true across the board, whether you're building a community, a company, or I guess a larger movement, we'll say, is really aligning with your peers or your colleagues or partners on what that needs to look like in order to bring the change you want to see in the world. And so, you know, I've seen a lot, we've all seen a lot over the last few years of especially private companies talking but not doing, or doing in a very limited way because they're worried or concerned about how to really take action. And I don't have an answer for that. I think it's complicated. I think it's something that requires time.
Let me ask you something on that, right? Do you, so there's the, I describe myself as a pragmatic optimist, right? And I define that as someone who's deeply aware of the conditions on the ground around them, but then chooses to lean into the possible, right? And so I'm in this case going to say that this is how I look at this circumstance. Is it bad, or are we worse off because organizations will, you know, feign interest in these things, or have the superficial conversation, or do the PR exercise, or do the program that they do, but do it small and do it, you know, without a great deal of creative thought? Is that a bad thing? Does that set us back, or is that at least it's a starting point? Like at least that's happening versus when that they didn't even feign interest. Is it progress?
Absolutely. I would also consider myself a pragmatic optimist. I'm definitely an optimist, sometimes not always pragmatic, but I'm definitely an optimist as well. I think every inch counts. I think every moment, like if we're not, like if one is not free, none of us are free, right? Yeah. To paraphrase that saying. And I think about this often as someone who's also multi-ethnic, multicultural, multiracial. If my parents had grown up in the United States, but if my parents had grown up in the United States and had me like a few decades earlier, I would be illegal. Like their relationship would have been illegal.
Right.
And no, like, you know, multiracial marriage isn't changing everything for everyone, but it does mean it starts to open up conversations. So I think to use a more, you know, real example, as we think about how companies are building out these initiatives, I should also say there are companies who made promises and are keeping their promises and 100%. Doing the work.
Of course. We're not making blanket statements here.
Exactly. And I think that organizations, and I use that in a broad sense, you know, entities that do work together, if they're making an effort, it counts for something. It's a question of how long are they going to continue? This is a long game. We're not running on like short cycles. We need to continue doing the work and adjusting as the world changes. But I think it's as long as that inch is being taken every day and we're taking into account current social situations, how people are identifying in the time in that organization and being really responsive and nurturing of each other. Again, that empathy piece, we will continue to see change and hopefully at a much, much more exponential rate.
Yeah. Do you think empathy can be taught or learned?
I think empathy is a practice. So I think it's an ongoing lens through which to see things. So I think foundations can be. Someone can give you a framework of how to empathize. You need to actually practice it day to day to be able to carry it out in your life, whether that's your personal, professional, or what have you.
Yeah, I think it can. I've seen a handful of examples in my life where it surprised me that through not making this about me, but like through the influence or coaching of someone in a professional setting or just from the exposure and influence in a social relationship setting, people change. And then through their own exercise, as you would say, and their own exercise out in the world, right? They surround themselves or expose themselves to more different than what they were used to. And then become over time a more empathetic version of themselves than they were.
Absolutely. And I'd also like to add on that, you also do a lot of work globally. And, you know, you and I live in the United States. I'm from Canada and I'm hoping to move to London next year.
Woohoo! Proud Canadian on the move.
Exactly. But, you know, you do a lot of work globally. And I think one of the biggest shifts we're going to have to see, this thought is a little inspired from a book I read recently called How the World Really Works by a writer. I'm forgetting his first name right now, but his last name is spelled S-M-I-L. He's actually a professor at the university my grandfather taught at decades ago, which
nice
is so
full
funny.
Circle.
I didn't know that when I picked this book up.
Maybe the book picked you up because it knew that. Right?
It knew exactly. Is thinking about our reliance globally and yet our perspectives are often more national oriented or regional oriented. And I will hope we see a change there to a more global perspective, to a more collaborative and less harmful perspective, because I think that's actually where the big change happens, is when we stop thinking it's only limited to us and realize everyone listening to this can't see my hands, but limited to us in the smallest sense versus limited to us as a species on this planet.
And everybody listening to this always assumes that I'm doing something with my hand. So it's fine. I think we are, I 100% concur with you. There's two truths that I think are just universal. One is that we are tribal by nature, literally like from, as I would say, the time we crawled out of caves or however you want to put that beginning point. So we're tribal by nature, and that will always persist. But this multicultural, multi-ethnic, I'll call it borderless kind of existence of our future is inevitable. So this is, I often say with my friends on the far extreme ends of the other end of the perspective that I have, this isn't a debate about whether or not X, Y, or Z is going to happen or when it's going to happen. You have to accept first and foremost that this future is inevitable.
Agreed.
And to your point, yeah, I think I have to caution myself sometimes. And frankly, it's one of the fun things of the show is that I love asking the questions because I do realize I come from a much broader perspective, even though I am the typical like Americanized white middle-aged man, but I've put myself into a path of a broader experience. And so I understand others in the world very differently than most people who look or feel like me, or even most people who might look or feel like you, but have never left their
bubble. For sure.
But kudos to people like you through your work in all the different organizations that you're in, but like now with what you're doing with Irregular Hours, because frankly, that is looking out for the future, right? Because you're focusing the work on the generations that are younger than the rest of us. So like, because kudos to that and you, because frankly, what you're doing is the daily little grinded out small work of one person by one person by one person by five by 10 by 20 that actually is how we change the world. Like that's like disruption, as you used the word earlier, like is a word that's just been so bastardized by technology industry and it's not, doesn't even mean what it mean, what it meant if you look it up.
Absolutely.
Anymore. But what you're truly doing is on a one-on-one basis with human beings and their lives and their paths is you're truly helping them disrupt what's possible. Right. And that's ultimately like stringing together one of you, 10 of you, 100 of you, 1,000 of you, 1,000,000 of you is how we actually truly build the future of the world. But it's the world we've all got to get ready for because it's skipping politics, but I always say in the US context, like if we get through the next 10 years, I have crazy confidence in the next 50 to 100 years. Because of the inevitability of age demographics and multiculturalism, just the shift to we'll become the better, best version of ourselves.
Absolutely.
We could talk all day about all the different things you've got your fingers into and your hands on. Irregular Hours is what I really wanted to center today and help people to understand what it is. But now, fun part at the end of the show here, we're going to let you just share some wisdom. So we turn you into the mentor for the day. And I would love for you to share three pieces of advice, guidance, wisdom, however you want to frame it, and to whomever you want to hear this. I would love for you to do that and close us out by being our mentor for a bit.
Happily. I'm going to keep my advice more broad. And these are things that have worked for me. And my goal with saying them is to make them adaptable to whoever is listening. My first piece of advice, which I gave a nod to earlier in mentioning that I like spending my day with all the humans, is challenge yourself to meet one new person a week. And this is true whether you are an entrepreneur, whether you are a senior in high school and trying to figure out what's next, if you are someone who is in a community, whether it's professional or personal, that is not necessarily, and I'll use diverse and like, I use diverse like to mean like a lot of different things. Like that's age, that's gender, that's upbringing. Like there's so many factors to that. Try to meet one person a week. And that could be, you know, you just Google news articles about something you're interested in, find the person quoted and reach out to them. That's sending LinkedIn messages to a few people a month and seeing who says yes. But I think it's really important. It could be going to like your local bodega and like having a 5-minute conversation with the person who owns it. But I think it's really important just to get perspective on what's happening in the world, what's happening in your own life. And then of course, if you're talking about a more professional context or transition phase in your life personally, people have so many experiences and what they've gone through may not have any application to you, but at least you have a viewpoint to hear about and calibrate from. So I'm a very big proponent of making new friends wherever possible. I've always been like that. Even when I was in art school, you know, the dance majors and the drama majors did not hang out. And the art kids and the choir kids were on other sides of the cafeteria. And so my birthday parties were always like the weirdest combination of students from the school who like never knew each other and ended up becoming friends.
You're a human bridge. You are a walking bridge.
I try. And I think it's really important just for most folks to try at least once a week, maybe every other week because we're all busy. My second piece of advice for folks is something that I'm not always very good at, but I always recommend to others, which is finding time to just be alone and quiet. And this means maybe you're listening to music more like classical than anything with lyrics. Maybe you're just walking in your neighborhood. Maybe you're sitting and staring at a white ceiling, whatever it is. It could be 10 minutes. It could be an hour. I'm a really big fan of trying to get more truly solo time. And I know that can be hard. You know, if you live with other folks or you live in a situation where it's just noisy around you, that's, you know, the headphones, the earplugs, whatever it might be. But I think it's really important for us, to the point we had earlier around technology, it's really important to just find time for yourself, or you're not working, or folks aren't expecting something from you, even if it's for 2 minutes a day. I think it can make a really huge difference.
Unplug metaphorically and maybe digitally. Yeah.
Precisely. And the third thing I would advise is to eat your vegetables. I'm vegan, and I'm very interested in this area of work called regenerative agriculture, which we don't even have time to talk through. So folks should just Google it. There's been some extensions around this of like regenerative businesses, which you and I will have to have another conversation sometime, Rob, because you're going to love this. I think it's really important that we all eat vegetables. And just like, you know, when you look at, I think a lot about global warming and around the impact, not to be preachy as a vegan, but it's like, there's just like so much to consider. And it's on corporations, it's on the government to make the large change because they make the most impact. And to the point you and I have been talking about, it's those little actions we all take, whether it's one day a week where you're just not eating meat, or whether it's just making sure you support your local farmer. And so make sure you add lots of vegetables to your burger, just really making sure that we're at least taking into consideration what we're putting into our bodies and what we're supporting in the world.
That's awesome. I'm going to take a specific heed of that last one. I'm not a terrible eater. I'm not a great eater. I'm somewhere kind of in the middle now. I was a terrible, normal, Americanized, terrible eater most of my growing up and adult life. But I've also like secretly, and I don't know why this is, because I mean, it's my choice, but I could do it tomorrow if I wanted to. But I feel like by the time I'm 60, I'll be vegetarian. Like, I don't know why. I don't know why. I don't like, I maybe I think if like my daughter's pretty much vegetarian, like she's pretty far down that path. So I feel like maybe that's in my head, but I don't know. I just feel like progressively as I get older now, I'm just going to get smarter about this stuff and just kind of narrow it down and just keep it healthier. And I'm not obsessive. I don't want to live to 112. If I get another 30 ish summers out of this thing called life, I'll be grateful. But I would like to like live it more healthy. So that's good for you.
I think it's also about listening to your body. And so I've been vegan for many years, and the last year, I guess a lot of other vegans would yell at me for this. Maybe I'm not fully vegan anymore, but I do eat seafood from time to time because my body, I was literally dreaming of sushi and literally, and my doctor, her prescription was go eat some sashimi. And I felt better, like immediately the dream stopped. I felt whole. And I don't eat seafood every day, but I eat it when my body tells me to. And so I think it's like eating food that makes you feel good in a healthy way,
right,
and supporting local farmers and folks who are growing that food for us, so we don't forget where it comes from.
No, yeah. And like you said, there's a whole other podcast about regenerative economies and all those types of things, because inevitably we will, again, that's why I have such crazy confidence in the world that will far outlive me, is because I think it's inevitable. We will cycle back to just more sustainable ways to exist and to coexist and to produce and to consume. And all that's going to lead to a bunch of this stuff. So it's going to be a fascinating 100 years after I'm gone. All right. So how do we find, how do people find, support, partner with Irregular Hours online? And then how do people, if you would like people to, how do they reach out to you and interact with you if that's of value?
Happily. So when it comes to finding Irregular Hours, folks can go to our website, which is irregularhours, like HOURS.com, and learn about what we're up to, do the archetype quiz, which again is 5 minutes and it's so fun. Sign up for some of the workshops that we run around it. We're also, we partner with university and college campuses all over. So if folks want to bring us down to run workshops, to run some of our programming, we have a really robust set of offerings, as well as employers, of course. You know, we want to support businesses, especially small to medium-sized businesses. We're very excited about some of the resources we're building out there. And so, yeah, reach out. And if you're just doing something and you want us to know about it, send a note, info@irregularhours.com. And when it comes to me, folks, it's very easy. Go to mikalajean.com. You can find all of my internet places to reach out. And I also actually have a reading list on there where you can see every book I've read from the last 4 years or so across. Oh, wow. And I read a lot of a wide range from science fiction to nonfiction to contemporary poetry. So lots of options in there for folks who need something new to read.
I love that. It's been an absolute pleasure. No, we're done now. So I don't have to say no pressure, but like no pressure. Like I had high expectations for this conversation and we have exceeded them. So
thanks, Rob. This was awesome. Thank you so much for the invitation.
It's been a joy. I always, whenever I end a show and in my mind or I verbalized it that like, oh gosh, we could talk about this for hours. To me, that's always a good show because that means there's substance and there's meat in both the relationship that we have and then in just your depth of potential and the value and that you bring to the world, which is we need a lot more Mika Lejeans in the world. So let's help amplify the one that we have.
And you're the best, Rob.
Let's help share your story. But it was awesome. Have a great day.
You too. I'll see you soon.
As always, we thank you so much for listening. Today's show was recorded in Los Angeles and produced by Deanna Bernal in Mexico City. You can always find, like, follow, subscribe, and share our show via any popular podcasting platform, as well as find us on social media at Mentors Today. And if you'd like to connect with our host, you can find Rob at I Am Rob Ryan on just about any social media platform. Gracias, and thank you.